Well, good day, everybody. This is Miss CC, the Real Infopreneur. Thank you all for joining me. I so appreciate it. So we're coming to you now with video and audio. So you'll be able to listen in two ways, and we'll let you know how to do that. So today I wanted to bring my guest to you in the midst of the COVID. You know, he's been able to teach classes because he's an educator as well as a self-defense instructor. And as you all know, as things have heated up in the environment that we're in, you need to know how to defend yourselves. Not in just one way, but in multiple ways. Have you thought about that? What about those of you that are afraid of firearms or other weapons? Have you thought about any sort of self-defense training? So our guest today is Mr. Everett Townsend, and he's going to talk to us about self-defense, bullying, and just things in general, how you can protect yourself. Everett, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
How are you today?
I'm doing good.
Good. Perfect. So talk to us about your self-defense company that you have. You teach several different means of self-defense. So let us know what that entails.
Okay. Well, my company is called Townsend Defense. And as far as hand-to-hand combat, I teach Krav Maga. Or I would like to say Townsend Krav Maga, because I've added a little few things to it. And there's some things I've kind of, you know, removed from it that are no longer relevant to the situation, things that are going on. And as well as Krav Maga, I also teach firearms. I teach rifle and pistol. And Townsend Defense also offers the Missouri State CCW class.
Okay. So when you say Krav Maga, I don't, like, most people don't even know what that is. I know what karate is, or judo or jujitsu, but Krav Maga. Can you explain to us what that is?
Well, that's the Israeli form of hand-to-hand combat. The IDF actually uses it, as well as several other organizations in Israel. And it's also a present day, so it's being used right now to in the country. So it's basically born out of a necessity, born out of war.
Wow. Okay. So one could learn this skill and be able to protect themselves on the street, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Perfect. So how long have you been teaching self-defense?
I've been teaching self-defense since about 2013. I've actually studied martial arts and shooting since martial arts since, oh goodness, forever. And shooting really since I've been shooting since I've been 12 years old, but I've been teaching it since probably in my early 20s.
Oh, wow.
And then as far as officially, you know, as a business, since about 2013.
Okay. So that's quite an extensive background in training. So what is actually an appropriate age to learn self-defense? Because, you know, I know that there are certain age appropriate things, but I ask that because I know that before COVID, I mean, children are not really contacting each other that much, but, you know, there's a whole movement in the country dealing with bullying and all that stuff. So what is the proper age to teach someone how to defend themselves?
Well, my classes start at 14, 13, if I meet the young person and I feel that they're mature enough. You can start really as low as 5, but that curriculum is different than a curriculum for like a 13, 14 year old, which is a little different curriculum than a person that's 16 years old.
Right.
So basically, you know, there are Krav studios that actually have a kid's class, but the curriculum isn't exactly the same. You know, young kids, you want to teach confidence first, you know, movement, spatial awareness, things like that. And then from there you build up.
Okay. So in that with a 5-year-old, because I can't even imagine, first of all, I can't imagine a 5-year-old being bullied because it happens. But a 5-year-old actually having to get down and do some serious moves, I can't really imagine that. But when you have to do that with a 5-year-old, and you're teaching self-confidence, do you also make it a means for them to, like, before they have to put their hands on somebody, I guess tell an adult first? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a standard procedure. Hey, you know, tell an adult.
Okay.
You know, walk away, do all those things. Mm-hmm. But if you have no other choice, then do what you have to do. That's okay. Not the best thing. You know, that's not the easiest thing for a five-year-old to do, though.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Five-year-old wants to get out there.
Yeah. So, you know, that curriculum is altogether different.
Right.
You know,
right,
yeah. You go through the program that you tell a typical five-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Mm-hmm. You know.
I definitely understand that. But, you know, it's sad that you have to think about a five-year-old defending themselves. Yeah. But I guess that would not just be against children. You know, we know that there are people who kidnap children as well, so they should know how to defend themselves against some stranger danger as well. So that's good. Now, what about the adults? Let's get into the adults. So would you say it's, because you're a school teacher, do you find it pretty neutral when deciding if it's easier to teach children or adults?
Okay, so honestly, for me, it's easier to teach adults. That's why I start. That's why I start at 13.
Uh-huh.
For me, it's easier to teach adults. Some people really enjoy teaching kids, you know, as far as that real young 5 to, you know, 10, 11-year-old range.
Right.
I just struggle with that. So, you know, right now my daughter and my nephew are my guinea pigs, you know. But my nephew's like 9, almost 10. So
okay,
he's getting to that age where I can, you know, he can start understanding moves and things like that.
Uh-huh.
My daughter, for her, it's just fun.
Right.
Hey, we'll hit this bag, we'll put on the gloves, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And luckily for her, she hasn't had to deal with a lot of conflict.
Right.
Other than the standard 5-year-old conflict, which at that point, any kind of self-defense really isn't necessary, because mm-hmm. the most she's been is like pushed.
Mm-hmm. Nobody trying to do some WWE moves or anything like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Right. And if that happened, then she wouldn't have, if that happened, then that's what I deal with, because there's an adult issue, you know.
Yes.
If some kid is doing that, yeah. that's an adult issue. And I want to meet that adult.
Right. Like, where's the supervision at? What's going on here?
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, this was happening. You know, it clearly has escalated. Yeah, that's right. It's an adult issue. So with the adults, what would you say, or how do you deal with people who are squeamish? Like, I just mean with having to deal with any sort of violence, or even the thought of having to use violence, although they know it's necessary, you know, because you have a lot of people who are like, okay, no, I don't like guns, or okay, I don't want to hit anybody. Like, how do you deal with that? How do you get them out of that mindset that they need to actually be able to protect themselves?
I put them in the mindset of they're not protecting themselves anymore. I mean, you can take the meekest, you know, least likely person to do violence mm-hmm. and say, especially if they have kids.
Okay.
That's a different person when you say, okay, mm-hmm. you're not protecting you anymore. What if that person now wants to hurt your child? That becomes a whole different ball of wax. You'd be surprised. People will do more to protect their children than they would to protect themselves if they have that instinct.
Uh-huh.
So if I want somebody to really get aggressive, I say, you're not protecting yourself anymore. You're protecting your niece, your godchild, your, you know, elderly parents. Somebody that they care deeply about, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they're a tiger. Mm-hmm. So you can say, now if you can do that for them, you can do that for you.
Wow. So when you have a person like that, is there like a generalization of like how long it actually takes for them to break out of the shell? Or when you mention that about protecting the children or the elderly parents, they just immediately come out of it and they're ready to protect?
Well, it depends on the person.
Kind of varies.
A lot of times they'll come out,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then once after the exercise or whatever, they got to wrap their head around what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Depending on if there's trauma that they've dealt with or mm-hmm. something to that effect, I found that, you know, they have to wrap their head around it, you know? Right. I remember when, like, adults, I remember when I said, okay, well, we're going to learn some moves that are deadly today. Mm-hmm. And I remember one person had to sit down mm-hmm. and, like, take a minute, be like, okay, mm-hmm. let me wrap my head around this.
Right.
You know.
Like, what does that look like? Deadly moves. Deadly. I might kill somebody. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to grasp. But, you know, again, talking about protecting yourself and protecting your family, mm-hmm. you know, you just have to be ready in these times. Because you could be anywhere and anything literally can jump off, you know.
But you know what, though? The thing about it is, this isn't new. You've always had to be ready.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not new. You know, violence has existed since, you know, man.
The beginning of time.
You know, I mean, Cain killed Abel. Yeah. He killed a rock. So
his brother.
You know, right. So it's just a lot of people thinking that old times are bad. Well, times really ain't never been all that good. Not for a long time. They go up and down. Mm-hmm. What it is now it's just, it's filmed more. Mm-hmm. And it's broadcast more. I mean, mm-hmm. the invention of social media, mm-hmm. you know, that changes things. Mm-hmm. So, but the violence has always been there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. The violence has always been there. And I think that a lot of us have, even if you've grown up in sort of a rough part of town or whatever, mm-hmm. we still have this kind of state of la la land. Like, it couldn't happen to me. And I mean, simply because you have a car, you know, you think, oh, this couldn't happen to me because I'm not out walking on the street or whatever. But it could literally happen to you anywhere. You could be getting in your car and somebody's in your car in the back seat. You know,
you that means you left the doors open.
Right. Something happened.
You left
something
the
happened.
Right? Well, if I that mean, happened, you left the doors open.
Right, but I've watched too many movies, but I've seen it, like, people are in the back seat and you're driving and then all of a sudden they're choking you or whatever.
I actually have moves for that too, by the way.
Oh, do you? You can get somebody out of that. Okay. You could be on the way to the car and not be ready with your keys and somebody attack you. So, like I said, it's kind of like we've been kind of in a la-la land world concerning safety. Even something as small as being aware of your surroundings, how important is that?
That is paramount mm-hmm. because if you're not aware, then you're taken by surprise. Mm-hmm. But if you're aware, you can avoid the situation altogether. Mm-hmm. You know, that's key. So I believe it was Jeff Cooper. Mm-hmm. I want to give credit to the right person. I believe it was Jeff Cooper. Mm-hmm. But he talked about the states of awareness. And, you know, you have your white, yellow, orange, and red, and then black. Mm-hmm. And so basically what it boils down, if you're in, a lot of people are in conditioned white. And conditioned white basically is you're clueless. Okay. That's when you're walking down the street with your headphones on too loud, and somebody comes up behind you, taps you on the shoulder, says, excuse me, and you jump. Mm-hmm. Okay. You weren't aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. Conditioned yellow is like when you're driving. So, you know, if you're driving down the highway mm-hmm. and you see, you know, you look in the rearview mirror, you see the car coming up really fast, or you look over there, you see the blinker on, and you're mm-hmm. really aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then you're almost playing those what if games. Well, if this person does this, I'm going to do that. If this person does this, I'm going to do that. And it's almost subconscious when you've driven long enough.
Right.
And then the condition orange is you're driving down the street and you look in the rearview mirror and that car that was way back is now coming really fast and say, okay, this guy's driving fast. Let me make sure I don't go into his lane to pass a car in front of me because I'm going to get rear-ended or what have you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then condition red is like, okay, he's coming really fast. You know, the person in front of me is going way slower and I'm kind of gaining on them. Maybe I need to go ahead, hit these brakes and do some sort of action, mm-hmm. you know? And then condition black is, I'm gonna have to switch to a different analogy, but you see some, you know, fights on, mm-hmm. fight or flight, mm-hmm. it's on.
Right.
You know, so condition red is like, oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. And for some people, condition red is fights on.
Right.
But condition black is also a fights on type deal. So it depends on which version of the scale you choose.
Right. You know, I saw a YouTube video, and this was, no, not YouTube. It was a Facebook something on Facebook. And it was like a black family, you know, one of those scenarios where they're at the grocery store and, you know, somebody's talking about Karen. I don't know, Karen, Becky, somebody. But the lady who was the Karen, you know, they call the Karen, she immediately had postured herself in such a way. I was like, wow. You know, she had the gun and she was just doing this pacing where she was walking backwards and getting a clear, what do you call it, trajectory of her target. Like, she was so ready to shoot this woman. And I was like blown away. I mean, it was clear that she had self-defense training, but apparently she had gone into the red immediately, you know, even though no one was attacking her. For some reason, she felt she needed to get in that stance, and she was walking backwards and she was pointing her gun at the woman. What would someone do in that situation when that happened?
Well, I would have to first see a video, because there are so many videos where people are doing things.
Yeah.
If she is that condition, if she's that amped up, what happened before? You know, depending on what state, what are the laws of that state? You know, where she could wield deadly force? Was she threatened with deadly force? Is it more than one person? You know, there's a lot of things that go into pulling a firearm than just, oh, I don't like you, or you're making me mad, or we have some sort of interpersonal conflict, we're going to go immediately go to deadly force. No, that's how you go to prison. So, you know, don't know why she went there. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, it was over a parking spot, and of course I was not there, but I saw a great amount of the video. It was over a parking spot.
Well, if it was over a parking spot, then basically she was trying to exhibit power. If it's just over a parking spot, mm-hmm. then everything, she's going against everything she should have been taught. Mm-hmm. Unless she was threatened first with deadly force. Now, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But if it's an argument over a parking spot and you produce a firearm, that is a crime.
Yeah, I believe they did take the woman to jail with the gun. I believe they took her to jail.
Yeah, so all the stuff that she was taught, she went against, or she should have been taught, she went against, because mm-hmm. you just over a parking spot. But honestly, too, you're saying, what can somebody do in that situation? Mm-hmm. Let them have the parking spot.
Right. It's not worth their life.
It's not that serious. Beep, beep. Okay, here, you want it? Here, fine, take it. Mm-hmm. And go on. I'm sure there's more than one parking lot in more than one parking spot in that lot. Okay, right. So you might have to walk 15, 20 more feet than at first. Guess what? Majority of people in the country need to walk more anyway.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Go ahead, find your parking spot, and when walking is not that serious. Mm-hmm. You know.
So it's about avoiding the conflict. Just before it even could be conflict, it's about avoiding the conflict, right?
Yeah. Keep life simple. Avoid the conflict if you can. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you can't avoid the conflict, that's when the skills come in handy.
Mm-hmm. You don't pull them out of your bag because you have them. You need to do your best to avoid it.
No, yeah. And that makes life more complicated, because the thing about it is most people only think in one dimension, but when you have a conflict, you got to deal with three.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you have a conflict, you know, okay, now you got to deal with yourself. Maybe this person just hit you, you hit them. Okay, now you got to fight. Then on top of that, you're going to have to deal with the police, because the police are going to get called. You're probably going to get filmed several different ways. You mm-hmm. got the surveillance cameras of the establishment. And when people fight, people break out cell phones so they can get, you know, Insta famous or Facebook famous and go viral. So now you got to deal with that. Okay. And then, you got three people, yourself, your opponent, and then you got to deal with the system. Who's going to collect all of that video?
Right.
So, you know, you have this, sometimes it's like, is it really worth it over a parking spot?
No.
Is it really worth it over getting cut off, you know?
No, and I believe it's something we have to actually run scenarios in our head before it happens, you know, because you know you're going to have the opportunity to get into it with somebody. You will have the opportunity. So I think that playing out scenarios in your head is the best way, especially when you're dealing with things on the road in parking lots. Because, of course, there's road rage now. I mean, mm-hmm. like, I know if I go a certain way here in St. Louis, the freeway is crazy. Like, I do not like going that direction because I feel like people drive a certain kind of way. So I kind of am on alert. Like, I'm really like looking at all my mirrors at all times, making sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you know? So if something does happen, I can make the best moves for myself. In no way, shape, or form do I ever want to get into any road race situation where you're flipping somebody off or whatever. Like, because what does that do? Like, that escalates the problem. When you start doing this back and forth stuff with somebody, you could get shot. You could get shot. So it's just really not even worth it. So, like, I play scenarios in my head, literally, like, okay, if somebody was to run into the back of my car accidentally, what am I going to do? You know, are you going to chase the person down the road? No, you're not going to do that. You're going to pull over and you're going to call the police and do the proper things that you're supposed to do.
If it's a hit and run?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm probably going to get chased. At least to get the license plate.
Oh, yeah, you're going to
get the license plate, get a description of the car, and call it from there. Like, that's just me, though. Now, I'm not going to try to catch the person because now what are you going to do when you catch them? But I'm getting,
You're trying to get the information. I get it. Totally.
That's just me, though. I'm just like, you're not getting away with this hit and run. If you don't disable my car, yeah.
Right. Well, that's understandable. But again, we want to be safe. I mean, if somebody jumped out on you, you could handle them. But, you know, somebody like me, I might be like, well, sir, you hit my car, you know. But you said just get the license plate.
Yeah, I'm not trying to catch him. I'm not trying to catch him.
Well, they might start feeling a certain kind of way because you're chasing them. And then,
oh, they're definitely going to feel a certain kind of way. But again, that's, you know, they're doing wrong anyway. Because honestly, you know, negotiations happen in accidents all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, if you got a particular problem, you know, let's just chit chat. You know you're in the wrong. You know, if you rear end me and you run, you know, yeah, I'm gonna get that license plate. Mm-hmm. So now you got a bigger problem because not only did you hit somebody, you ran for a reason, mm-hmm. and now you left the scene of an accident. That's a whole problem. So you make things worse. People assume that they're gonna run, they're gonna get away. Well, you got away for now.
Right.
But I'm gonna make the claim, and next thing you know, you're gonna have the boys at your door.
Right.
And then the boys like sometimes do fishing expeditions.
Right. Like, why did you run? What's in this house? What's in this car? Like all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So. And I've actually, to be honest with you, since I've been here, I've been in 5 car accidents and I've been here for 5 years. And 2 of them were almost hit and runs. One, I was like literally parked on the side of the street and this girl just ran into the back of my car and just decided to try to drive off. And it was like, how do you do that? How do you just drive off and then later become angry because you're questioned? I mean, it's just quite ridiculous. Like for me, like I said, I have to play these scenarios in my head. Like what if, you know, because I don't want to start screaming and yelling. I want to remain calm. You know, that's something that we have to practice is remaining calm in the situation. Because mm-hmm. I'm assuming if your adrenaline goes up, that kind of takes away from you. And then you really are not able to adequately defend yourself if you're so hyped up before anything kicks off. Is that right? I mean, I don't know. Just think of
that's where the training. That's where the training comes in.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, a lot of things, when you're in a fight or flight situation, you're no longer using the prefrontal cortex. You're using your mammalian brains, they like to call it. So you're using your subconscious. Mm-hmm. So when you're training, of course, you need to see a variety of things and, you know, start to build habits, things like that. So you can defend yourself under adrenaline. People do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But the remaining calm, there's things and skills you learn to be able to do that. You know, de-escalation is always a thing you want to learn how to do because that's just as important skill as being able to throw a proper punch.
Right.
You know, because you don't know why this person's amped up anyway.
Right.
I mean, you don't know what's going on. And it's like, okay, look, you know, I get it. You ran into me. You got insurance. You don't have insurance. Well, I can't help you with that. But, you know, you try to de-escalate first. And if they, because it's real hard to escalate when you're not getting energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of things, and that's the whole thing about de-escalation. Don't give them the fuel to fire. They mm-hmm. have to now do it on their own. Now, if they intend on doing it on their own, then you just have to, whenever they decide that they want to attack you, then you need to be, you know, ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, a lot of times when people, when you have these conflicts, people escalate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, most normal people have to talk themselves into violence.
Mm-hmm.
Some way, somehow.
Unless they're unless used to being violent all the time, then that conversation, it talks for itself, I guess.
Yeah, and that's not most normal. That's not most people.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, when they get to the point of violence, there has been a significant stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, a car accident may or may not be a stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's their fault. Mm-hmm. If it's your fault, you know, I've been ticked off at people who've rear-ended me, but at the same time, you know, it's an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody rear-ended, most people don't rear-end people on purpose. It's an accident. Oops.
Right.
You know, I had somebody like literally total a car of mine sitting on the side of the road.
Yes.
Like they totaled.
I've had that happen.
Right. And so like, you know, here I am. I'm actually at the scene of an accident helping. Well, I'm at the scene of an accident helping somebody else because mm-hmm. that person was a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And I parked my car away from where the accident happened, thinking nothing would happen to my car. Mm-hmm. Well,
mm-hmm.
the same thing that happened to my loved one,
mm-hmm.
it was a slick street. That person just happened to be a little further down the street. Same thing happened, and they hit my car.
Wow.
You know, now were they driving a bit fast? I think so. Mm-hmm. But they hit my car. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Had that conversation, you know, when they came out, oh, I was heated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, guess what? His son just deployed to Afghanistan.
Oh.
So that's where they're coming back from.
Yeah, there was a back.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was that conversation, well, you know you owe me a car, right? You know what I'm saying? And they paid for the car and everything was all good.
Okay. You know? Well, that's good that it can settle like that. But, you know, like you said, sometimes there's a stimulus. Sometimes the stimulus is drugs. Like people are high or drunk or something, and you know, in that instance, I would think that, you know, the best scenario would be just to stay in your car. Like if you're in the car, just stay in the car. If you're going to give chase to get the license plate, that's one thing, but I can't see myself running after somebody who appears to be drunk or high.
Well, you can't make that determination until you actually see them.
Right, exactly. I mean, but I just in what I'm seeing just in my mind as I play these things through my head, I just think I would just kind of pull over and call the police. Because again, I've been in 5 car accidents. The last one was in Illinois. It was like in February. We were in traffic. Now this could have gotten crazy, but we were in traffic and we were all stopped. And it was a 4 car accident. I don't know what the person was doing. I don't know what they were doing, but their car is totally messed up. And that was the 3rd car. That could have gotten really ugly, you know, because you're dealing with 4 different individuals in you know, 4 different cars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been in a pile up for 2. My default thing is when an accident happens, particularly when a significant damage to the car,
mm-hmm.
my first question is, are you okay? Do you need medical assistance?
Right.
How are you gonna be mad at that?
Right.
You know, or even if it's a fender bender, you know, I've had fender benders that hurt. So my first question, hey, you okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you need medical assistance? You know,
mm-hmm.
and then from there, mm-hmm. you know, they're okay. You're okay. Okay. We're calling the police, you know, really for insurance issues, because that's all they're going to do anyway. You know, they may or may not ticket somebody.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, that person may or may not face any kind of, you know, criminal issue, whether it be a citation or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's to document for the insurance company.
Right, right.
And the thing about it is, what people don't tend to understand, though, is that the insurance company they're not, if it's your fault and you're not having insurance, the insurance company will pay for my car because that's what I pay for.
Right.
They're going to sue you.
Yes, personally.
Mm-hmm. Because, right, because they want their money back. They're like, okay, we just paid $6,000 for his car. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to sue you for at least $6,000.
Right. You exactly. Know. So let's move to, like, protecting your home, you know. What are some things that people should be doing in protecting themselves in their home? I mean, I guess most people have, like, a security system or something. But if you are not trained and you don't have any sort of training at all, what would you suggest for people that want to protect their home?
Well, first thing is just the simple things. Lock your doors.
Who doesn't do that?
You would be surprised.
There are people that don't lock their doors.
There are people who walk around the house all the time and the door's unlocked. Yeah.
Where?
You would be surprised.
Super surprised.
In places that people don't think crime takes place. Like, people walk in a house and just close the door behind them. Might not lock their door till bedtime.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So the first thing is lock your doors.
Lock your doors.
If you have a garage door, keep it closed. Because mm-hmm. that's one area of two layers of protection.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Lock, you know, garage doors, of course, electric, so you can't just raise it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the garage door stays locked. So now that's one area they're definitely not going to. Just keep your doors locked.
Mm-hmm.
Maintain your privacy. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people like to take their blinds and have them up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't raise them too high so somebody can see completely into your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
My blinds stay closed pretty much all the time because okay. I'm a private person. I don't want people looking in my home.
Mm-hmm.
Especially my front blinds are always closed.
Mm-hmm.
Backyard, maybe not, depending on what my daughter feels like doing. It kind mm-hmm. of perturbs me with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So keep your blinds closed or low. If you want to get that, you know, nice spring breeze or fall breeze to your house when you raise your window,
mm-hmm.
keep your blinds closed or at least, mm-hmm. you know, no higher than the window so that people aren't looking into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for starters. I would recommend a good security system. You know, good keypad. Have a keypad close to the door and then have one in your bedroom.
Mm-hmm. And what would be a good security system without amping up or promoting any particular one? What should you look for in a security system?
I would look for something that has window sensors, door sensors, motion detectors, nowadays cameras if you can get them,
mm-hmm.
And multiple keypads. So if you can have one by the main door or one by a central area in the house that when you close the door and it says, you know, please put in your passcode, you can get to it without it going off. But mm-hmm. then I would like to have one in my bedroom,
mm-hmm.
you know, because mm-hmm. there's panic buttons on that keypad.
Mm-hmm.
So have one in your bedroom so that you can hit that panic button if you need to.
Okay.
You know, and I'm a big, you know, cameras around the house are a game changer.
Yeah, definitely.
You know.
So what do you think about, okay, that's a security system. What about having a dog? Is that good?
Well, okay, so here's the thing about a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know your dog
mm-hmm.
because dogs can be defeated. If a dog is really, because see, you have, there's a dichotomy with a dog.
Okay.
On one end, you want the dog friendly and be around people and not take off somebody's finger.
Mm-hmm.
On the other end, you want the dog to be a protector. Now, most people believe that their dog is going to naturally protect their home. And in some cases, the dog will.
Okay.
In some cases, the dog won't.
Oh.
You know, in some cases, the dog's like, oh, hey, you coming in? You know, I know we used to have a dog. We had a dog one time that we used to think that would hold the flashlight for the burglar, you know.
Uh-oh.
I mean, just because it's a friend, he was friendly.
Right.
You know, so you have to understand the breed of dog, and there might be some training involved
mm-hmm.
as well to be sure that your dog is going to do the job that you purchased the dog for.
Mm-hmm.
Most dogs are really good deterrents.
Mm-hmm.
Because they bark.
Yes, they bark. They do.
And if they're the protective breed, that mm-hmm. bark is going to sound like you open this door and you're going to get eaten.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, a loyal dog is a good thing to have. Mm-hmm. But also understand too, some of those breeds don't do well with children. So if you have a child, mm-hmm. you know, that dog has to be of a temperament that's more forgiving than perhaps some of the more aggressive breeds that you would want to use, mm-hmm. you know, for that deterrent. Mm-hmm. So you just have to understand the temperament of your dog, the temperament of the breed. Mm-hmm. Is the dog well-bred? Make sure it's not inbred to keep the bloodline pure if you so choose to get a purebred dog. Mm-hmm. And then treat the dog well. Mm-hmm. You know, don't mistreat the dog, because the dog will then probably, you know, mistreated dog is not going to be a good protector.
Right. You know? That dog is probably confused because he's expecting to be loyal to you, but you're treating him poorly. So, yeah. You know, what I have seen is some people have dogs that are not socialized. Like, they totally have that dog. Like, for instance, we'll just say pit bull. You know, we know they have a certain reputation. But I've seen people that do not socialize that dog, and they keep him or her outside and treat him like a wild animal because they want that dog to definitely be a protector. It's not supposed to be a family pet. He doesn't get thrown balls. He's not going for walks. He's just in the yard eating all kind of strange meat. Just in case somebody comes up, that dog is definitely trained to take somebody's head off. Have you seen that before?
I've heard of it. People who generally do that don't understand how dogs work. There's a lot of ignorance going on.
Right. Right.
You know, the dog protects a pack. It doesn't feel it's if it's in a pack, then, you know, it's not going to be what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And dogs have reputations. I mean, you got to remember, the Little Rascals had a pit bull. That was the pit bull.
Oh, the one you have a circle around his eye or something like
that? Yeah, that dog was a pit bull.
Oh.
The pit bulls aren't new.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I said, treat the dog well. I mean, people do things like that, oh, I got to make them mean. No, you really don't have to.
Right.
Depending on the breed, you don't have to make them mean. What you need to do is treat them like, you know, treat them well, treat them like a member of the family.
Right.
Because, you know, it's just, people assume that dogs think like humans and they don't.
Right.
You know, and humans half the time need training too. We're dealing mm-hmm. with dogs. You know, you train a dog, you also got to train a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need classes. Absolutely. Yeah.
I've heard that, and you know, that, you know, mistreatment of dogs, certain breeds of dogs will make them vicious. Mm-hmm. And that's how your dog gets shot.
Yeah, that's unfortunately true. Yeah. For the most part, I would say
that's how you get sued. Your dog is shot and you get sued.
Oh yes.
You know, that has happened. You know, a dog that's not socialized and you're invited into the home, or a dog that's not socialized, it gets out. Mm-hmm. Because usually when they're tied up, they're not always tied up well, and they get out. Mm-hmm. And that's how your dog gets shot. Growling and snarling and pow, I'm not having it, because someone's protecting their loved ones and not going to have it. That's how your dog gets hurt.
Exactly.
Or that's how you get sued, because, you know, your dog bit somebody when they shouldn't have.
Right. And it could lead to many other legal matters as well. So, I mean, that's just something that you have to consider. Now, I know that I have a Chihuahua, but she's not here right now, but I've had two Chihuahuas, and they were very good with letting you know, that somebody was at the door, or even when you go on a walk, like, you know, because they're a territorial dog, like anybody walking in the space, they're like, wait, this is my space. Don't come here. Don't come near her. Don't come near me. You know, they're very good at being vocal and barking, not necessarily going to bite, but very vocal. So I wouldn't mind having just a dog to let me know that somebody's there, not necessarily a dog that's going to tear somebody's head off. I mean, that would be nice too, if that was what was needed, but just to let me know that somebody was around the house or they hear something, I think that would be good. Now, what about having a weapon? I'll just say a weapon. Like if you're new to weapons and you would like some sort of weapon, what would you suggest the person purchase or get training on?
Well, I would say this. There's several different theories about what kind of weapon you use to defend your home. But first thing you got to take stock of is what kind of home do you have? Mm-hmm. You live in an apartment, that's going to be a very different firearm than if you live in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, if you live in the country and your nearest neighbor is, you know, half a mile or a mile away, mm-hmm. you have some more options than if you live in an apartment, mm-hmm. you know. And if you live in a suburban home, there are options there. So it all depends, A, where you live. Mm-hmm. I'm honestly a handgun person, mm-hmm. mostly because a handgun, you can manipulate a handgun with one hand. Mm-hmm. So if I have to open a door, you know, then you also have a home defense plan, mm-hmm. because for me, I have a family. Mm-hmm. I have a young child. Mm-hmm. So if I have to go scoop up the young child, I do that with one hand. Well, if the intruder presents themselves mm-hmm. with my child in my hand, I don't want to have to be dealing with a firearm that requires two hands to work, such as the a long gun, shotgun, mm-hmm. or a rifle.
Yeah.
If I live in an apartment, you know, AR-15s are very popular. It's the most popular rifle in the United States. A lot of people protect their homes with AR-15s, whether it be a pistol caliber carbine or a rifle caliber carbine. Mm-hmm. You know, if I live in an apartment, a rifle caliber carbine might not be something I would choose, because if you miss, you're going to have some problems with people above you, below you, and to either side.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. You know, you may still have that problem with a handgun, mm-hmm. but that penetration won't be as bad, but you right. may still have that problem. Mm-hmm. Shotgun, in my opinion, it's, you know, too much recoil, it's too loud, and it's with two hands. But people say, go get a shotgun. I'm not that person. So you really have to decide what your situation is, mm-hmm. and then if you choose a firearm, go from there.
Okay.
So there's no one size fits all. It's what is your situation? Mm-hmm. What is your budget? Mm-hmm. What is your desire to train? Mm-hmm. Because AR-15, all guns require training.
Yes.
You know, how much are you going to train with this thing? Mm-hmm. And go from there.
Okay. So with that, how would one actually decide, outside of budget, how would one decide what sort of handgun to get for themselves personally? How would you do that? Because if you go to the gun shop, you're not necessarily going to have somebody there catering to what it is that you actually need. And I'll give you an example. When I went there, it was like, what do you want? You know, it wasn't, this would be best for you. It wasn't like somebody there that was ready to hold my hand and show me what might be best for me. It seems like they were more interested, I don't want to say upselling, but yeah, upselling me. You know, I could go in thinking one thing, but then they tell me that I need something else, but they weren't really giving me any sort of guidance. You know what I mean? So how would you look for the proper firearm?
Well, first thing is get a consultant, you know, and I do offer that service.
Okay.
Get a consultant, talk to somebody who's knowledgeable and who's actually knowledgeable, not just somebody you think is knowledgeable. So you got to, you know, vet them a little bit, mm-hmm. but you have to basically find the gun that's right for you. Hand fit, mm-hmm. You know, a lot, you can tell a lot by just holding it, mm-hmm. but then truly pay attention to what it feels like. Mm-hmm. You know, if the trigger pull is really long, that's probably not for you. If you have small hands and the gun has a wide handle, that's not going to be a good gun for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you can feel that, mm-hmm. you know, good sights. If you can see the sights, then, you know, you could probably work with it. There are guns out there that have sights that are very poor. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not meant for general shooting. They're meant for very close, personal, 7 yards and under mm-hmm. type of shooting. Mm-hmm. So first thing is, before you go to the place to, before you purchase a firearm, know what the purpose of your firearm is. Mm-hmm. Number one, is it home defense? Is it concealed carry? Is it general plinking? Is it teaching others how to shoot? Know the purpose. Mm-hmm. And then really stay with the quality brands. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go and buy a uber cheap gun because it was $200. You're probably going to be buying another gun at some point.
Right.
I had some people find that out in a class I just had, that their firearm wasn't reliable and that they needed to probably make a different purchase. So stay with your major quality brands. I would say the brands that your local law enforcement is using. And I said law enforcement, highway patrol, municipal police, you know, I would start there. They picked those guns for a reason. You know,
right.
they picked those guns because those guns passed some tests that the agency issued out. You know, I'm partial, you know, look at what federal law enforcement is carrying. You don't have to buy the exact gun they carry, but look at the brand.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Start there. And then, you know, you can't go wrong with those brands.
Right, right. Now, I think that people are, and this is with everything, not just with firearms, but people, even though we have all of this access with the internet, they're like not really willing to do the research themselves. I think that that would equip them, don't you? Like, even if they decided to consult with you, just preliminarily do a little bit of research, find out what's out there, find out what people are saying. And then once they come to you, they can bring to you questions as well as you be able to give them the proper commentary on what you feel would be best for them. Don't you think that would be better for them to do research?
Yeah. I mean, you can also, you can always do research. And there's now, because so many new shooters are purchasing firearms, there are, you don't even have to research. You can go to YouTube.
Yes.
And there are all kind of people have videos that cater to new shooters. Like, I mean, they go through everything, all kind of videos for that. I know Smith & Wesson and Provectus Group, they have a series for new shooters, you know, and that's a collaboration. Now they are saying, hey, buy a Smith & Wesson. But if you choose not to buy a Smith & Wesson, there are some videos. Those videos are good. Like, you know, I also happen to know the partner in that. You know, I've trained with that person. He's a good guy. It's some good information there. I'm like, oh, really? You know, so I'm even learning things, and I'm an experienced shooter.
Right.
So, you know, so yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there for new shooters.
Okay, so there's no reason for anybody to walk into it completely ignorant, is what you're saying.
No, there's not. Okay. And, it, you know, a lot of times people purchase guns because they're panicked. They purchase guns for, you know, where they're like, look, I don't have time. I just need a gun. I need it right now. You know, and that's really what has happened.
Right
prior to COVID, you know, between all the other stuff that's been going on, but right prior to COVID, as soon as people started to buy toilet paper, they started to buy guns.
Right.
People who would have never wanted a gun ever. It's like, oh my goodness, I need a gun. I need to go right now.
Toilet paper. Let me go get them both right now. Yeah.
I need toilet paper, paper towels, and a gun.
Yes.
And they went right then. And I mean, I saw it for myself because I had to consult people during that time. And like price gouging was going on.
Yes.
And, you know, price gouging for firearms that are of poor quality.
Yes.
I mean, and you could see the guns that got bought first. It was between that $200 and $500 range. Gone. The only thing left was the uber expensive. Uber expensive, pretty high quality, but expensive. So that's when you hit the 7, 8, 9 on up range. And some of the really poor ones, some of those, some were left. Everything else was gone. And really, you know, your budget for a firearm should be at least $500.
Right.
For a quality firearm. That's going to put you.
What would you say, you know, we're talking quality firearms, so that's like new, but what about purchasing something that is previously owned? Like, how do you feel about that?
If it's a quality firearm, you should be fine. Mm-hmm. But see, the thing about it with used guns, you should know something of what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I actually predict when all this is over and things kind of get back to a sense of normalcy, there are going to be a lot of used guns on the market. Because some of those people who panic bought, I don't need a gun anymore. So there's going to be some used guns out there that have, you know, been shot once, you know.
Or not shot at all, because I deal in estate sales and you see some stuff that is like brand new in a box. And it's like, okay, what happened here? Yeah.
Really? And you didn't call me for those estate sales? I'm just saying.
I'll send you a link.
Right. So there's going to be a surge of used guns. I predict a surge of used guns, you know, sometime maybe mid next year, maybe this time next year, a little bit earlier.
Okay.
People are going to start getting rid of them because they say, oh, well, everything's okay now. I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Forgetting all the lessons beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what you're looking for, you can get a good firearm that's pre-owned. But you really should know something about that brand of firearm.
Yes.
And if you get the opportunity to test fire it, do so. So there are ranges out there who also sell firearms, mm-hmm. and they also sell used firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of ranges with used firearms will say, hey, well, you want to go shoot it? Because it means it's already used. They mm-hmm. won't let you do that with a brand new one, but they will let you do that with a previously owned one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think that we've gathered some great information here, but what I would like our local people to know, and even people who are listening around the world, if they want to call you or email you to consult with you about firearms,
mm-hmm.
If they want to connect with you on social media or even invite you onto their platform to speak more in-depthly about self-defense or protection, if they want to join your class, please let our listeners know how they can get a hold of you.
Okay, well, the best way to really get a hold of me is to start with email, mm-hmm. and that's townsenddefense@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My social media, if they want to shoot me a message on social media, they can, start with Facebook. So it's Townsend Defense STL
mm-hmm.
on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And on Instagram, it's Townsend_defense for Instagram. So shoot me a message. I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Phone for me is kind of hard right now because I also am, you know, a lot of times in the middle of class and, you know, it's a little harder to get me on the phone than it is to send me an email or shoot me a message on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that way I, you know, some people don't like to leave messages and, you know, on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing to do is get me on social media or just send me an email and I'll get back to you ASAP.
Cool. So do you have any last or closing advice for the people who are out here listening? Maybe the ones who are sort of panicked, but not if they don't know if they should be panicked. You know, what last or closing advice do you have for us, I guess, in general? What do we need to know?
Well, I would say that first and foremost, if you're trying to defend yourself,
mm-hmm.
don't just depend upon a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I'm a firearms trainer,
mm-hmm.
don't depend on the weapon first. That is your last option.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should have hand-to-hand combat skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should have some sort of hand-to-hand skill, some sort of empty-handed self-defense skill. And I don't mean I've been in a few fights, you know, growing up, or I lived in a rough area, so mm-hmm. I've been in a few fights. No. That's not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in a few fights doesn't teach you how to access your weapon during a close situation.
Mm-hmm.
So have some hand-to-hand. You know, before you buy your firearm, do some research. Talk to somebody that's knowledgeable, that's truly knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
Or call me, you know, hit me up on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And then train with that firearm if you so choose to. Mm-hmm. Or let's say you don't want to buy a firearm. Let's say you just want pepper spray.
Right.
You can buy a pepper spray trainer mm-hmm. and learn how to deploy a pepper spray under under stress.
Okay.
So whatever it is you decide to do, you need to train mm-hmm. and practice. Mm-hmm. You know, hand to hand is also good exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You yes. know, whatever you so choose to do, mm-hmm. you know, wherever you so choose to go,
mm-hmm.
it's good exercise. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would advise, you know. And also in that system, have some de-escalation skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because the best fight to get in is one that never happened. So, you know, learn some de-escalation skills as well. So you want a holistic, well-rounded self-defense plan.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pigeonhole yourself on one thing, you know.
Definitely be well-rounded. That sounds good.
Yeah.
So if the listeners would like to reach out to you, you know, because maybe they're not in St. Louis and they want advice on how to choose a self-defense trainer in their area or a firearms trainer in their area, you know, they can definitely reach out to you by email, mm-hmm. any, you know, social media. But yeah, so we definitely invite you all to do that. And we'll have the information in the description boxes so that you could reach out to him in case you didn't write it down. But we want to say thank you so much to you, Everett of Townsend Defense here oh. in St. Louis, Missouri. We appreciate your time. And this has been Ms. Cece, the Real Infopreneur. And we will talk to you all again later. Thank you so much.